Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome, folks.
What are you doing?
We're doing Little Shop of Horrors and he's gone mad.
Just the gas. Just the gas.
It turns you on, I see.
What drives a man to murder? Is he driven by lust, greed, or envy? Or is he driven by a mean green mother from outer space who's mad?
Come a talking. Learn some musical history with us here on a serial podcast talking. Musical history podcast. Oh no.
Welcome, folks, to Talking Musical History Podcast. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Chris.
Today, we're going to be talking about a little-known musical that started as a joke.
Oh, man. What is it? Ooh.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, man. One of my favorite. I think it's really hilarious that this movie is from a musical. This phenomenon was created by one of the greatest horror film B-movie sci-fi creators, Roger Corman. He never intended for this phenomenon to happen with this really raucous plant.
He is called the Pope of Pop Cinema.
Ooh.
Yeah, and the guy who wrote it with him, Charles B. Griffith, Quentin Tarantino called the father of redneck cinema.
Oh, yeah. No, Quentin Tarantino freaking loves the hell out of Roger Corman. I mean, you can see a lot of his Roger Corman's filming stylings in Quentin Tarantino's films, most definitely. Yeah, no, I mean, but you'd expect that from so much of a man who makes movies like the original The Fast and the Furious from 1955, or A Bucket of Blood in 1959, or House of Usher in 1960, The Wasp Woman, Dimension 13, Death Race 2000. The man knows how to create really creepy and odd ideas.
Actually, the story itself, a human eating live plant, story dates back to 1905's H.G. Wells' The Flowering of the Strange Orchid that led to Arthur C. Clarke's 1956 short story, The Reluctant Orchid, about a carnivorous orchid that almost kills the man who buys it at an auction.
Interesting.
Meets with a 1932 story by John Collier, influenced by Hans Christian Andersen as well, who we talked about in another podcast.
Yeah. Wow. He keeps coming back up.
Called Green Thoughts, about a man eating plant. Then we get a film by Roger Corman, written by Charles B. Griffith, that starred Jonathan Hayes, Jackie Wells, Mel Wells, and Dick Miller. The film is a black comedy with farce and Jewish humor thanks to Fred Katz. It cost $28,000 to make and was shot in 2 days using a set left over from A Bucket of Blood.
Oh, wow. That's so clever. The way he was able to make Little Shop of Horrors, you said, like, he knew that A Bucket of Blood was ending and he's like, wait, the set's not getting torn down yet? I could probably make another movie before the set gets torn down. That makes so much sense.
He was a real innovator. A genius does that.
Sees that opportunity and seizes it.
He had no idea when he did this how big this was going to come. In the original movie, of course, Jack Nicholson, which stars...
Yeah, Jack Nicholson, sort of the biggest in the future. Yeah, that's how they sold a lot of the DVDs in the past. When I bought one, it's like, you know, you got Jack Nicholson's face on the... on the cover of The Little Shop of Horrors, and he's like barely in it.
One of the people that Audrey would have been cast with instead of Jackie Joseph, who I'm going to say I've never heard of. He was originally going to cast for Audrey, Nancy Culp, who, if you don't know who she is, it's understandable. Now, the reason I know her is because she was a trailblazing lesbian who played Jane Hathaway on TV's Beverly Hillbillies.
Oh, did she really?
Yeah, that's right. That is Jane Hathaway. That's hilarious. I forgot. I haven't seen that movie in forever.
Well, the movie actually was played Lily Tomlin, who's another trailblazing lesbian.
Are we talking about the Corman movie?
A Corman movie, yeah, was supposed to have Nancy Culp as Audrey.
Oh, okay.
Jack Nicholson with Nancy Culp, it was supposed to be a PI, like a private investigator version of the film, where the dentist was a private investigator.
Huh? The dentist is a private investigator?
Jack Nicholson would have been Jocko.
The original Roger Corman film does have a lot of noir elements to it, like the way it opens.
Wait 20 years, you genius. Howard Ashman and David Geffen. David Geffen, for those of you who don't know, long and short story of it, he's a rich guy who made a lot of movies. Howard Ashman, one half part of a genius duo, EGOT winner. Alan Menken, Howard Ashman, the late great Howard Ashman, who died just before the release of Beauty and the Beast, was a gay man living and died of AIDS at the height of the AIDS epidemic. He took this story that was made out of a joke and he took it and he talked with Alan Menken, and this was their first team up. After this, then they did Little Mermaid, which revived the Disney Pictures industry. Then moving to Aladdin, which was pre-written before Beauty and the Beast. Thankfully, Disney listened to two beautiful mentions.
I think they also wanted to do like a musical Space Treasure Island.
Yeah, they saw Star Wars and they shouldn't have.
It started on Off-Broadway in 1982. It really is. It's sci-fi Broadway meets Jew Motown connected, going on to earn the Drama Desk Awards for Outstanding Musical and Lyrics. This was the start of a wonderful working relationship, changed the world. This Howard Ashman died before his genius could really be, I think, fully understood. They just recently came out on Disney Plus with the documentary Howard, which tells a very powerful influence of the world and what he left to us. And I definitely recommend watching that if you are able to.
All right. Yeah, that's a solid suggestion. Thanks, man.
Yeah, and it made me tweet at Alan Menken, who actually thanked me for my heartfelt tweet to him.
That's pretty dope.
It makes me feel good when I hear Alan Menken's songs. He's done Newsies, and then more recently, he opened you up in that beautiful stoner movie, The Sausage Party.
That's terrific, though. That really is terrific. I do appreciate the movie Sausage Party. I know people that do not. I don't care. It's funny.
If you were expecting Sophie's Choice, I'm sure you would have been definitely disappointed.
Yeah, no, it's not like it's Citizen Kane, guys. I mean, we know where it's at.
Seth Rogen. Talking bagels.
Potty humor. Just get over it. Little Shop of Horrors is definitely prolific.
It introduces you with a 1950s pulp sci-fi monologue. And then Hello Motown. That is so campy and wonderful.
I really like what you said earlier. It made me really think of that title song. And I'm like, you know, you think in most like regular sci-fi films, opening title sequences are all like, you know, shock and awe, like, you know, like this great and terrible thing is going to happen, right? But with this, they're like lullabying you, but they're telling you this great and terrible thing is going to happen.
It had one of the most prolific people connected with any sci-fi fantasy, probably the world. And that would be directed by the legendary Frank Oz.
I thought you were going to say Rick Moranis because of his connections to Ghostbusters.
There's something good in the neighborhood.
But Frank Oz, obviously, super important person. Obviously, like, without his work in Star Wars, we would not have Yoda.
The Dark Crystal. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. What About Bob? In and Out. Bowfinger. The Score. Death at a Funeral, and many other projects.
And the Muppet movies, right?
Yeah, The Muppet Show Tonight and The Muppet Movie. Filmed, actually, at Pinewood Studios in England at the Albert R. Broccoli 007 stage. Yes, named after a James Bond film producer, where the complete downtown set was constructed.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool. But, you know, that's pretty typical for Hollywood and Hollywood locations. So that set that they shot Little Shop of Horrors was like a Bond set?
Originally, Steven Spielberg was going to get to work with Martin Scorsese and John Landis. But after a lawsuit by Charles B. Griffith, Geffen offered it to Oz. At the time, he was finishing Muppets Take Manhattan, my personal favorite Muppet movie.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, like, you know, because that, like, if you watch the movie, it is a tight production. Like it just like flows from beginning to end, and then all of a sudden it's over, and you're like, isn't there more movie?
There was never a time in that I thought, could they speed this up? They don't need this scene. Every single moment, every single beat, it had either rhythmic talking or music in every single second of this movie.
Even like the whole thing is choreographed, right? You know, you have like the customer falling into the dentist chair on the beat during the I Am the Dentist song. I would have to say one of the best musical translations. Like, and I know people would disagree because of the ending.
The ending is the most different between the original stage play and the movie. And the reason is actually because the original stage play, Audrey sacrifices herself so that she can live somewhere
that's green
to help Seymour realize his dream.
No, and I totally, like, that makes sense. When I first watched this musical, like, and I've watched it on stage, and I've definitely watched the movie a ton of times, and like, I never really thought of Seymour as much of a villain or as a bad person, like a little bit of an opportunist. But like now, like after I like rewatch it and think about it, like I think to myself, hey, guess what? Like at no point in time did Seymour ever think to himself, what's this plant's story? All of a sudden the plant could talk. And he never asked himself, how did the plant learn to talk? He never asked the plant. He never asked any question that might give him any level of suspicion about what was going on.
Suspicion? I don't think they understand in this movie. They don't see the signs until it's too late.
It makes me realize that Seymour is more of a murderer than I realized initially, right? With Oren Scrivello, like in the original musical, he has a song, It's Just the Gas, It Gets Me High, which you were singing earlier, which I love. And, you know, he starts off with, do it now, while he's, you know, setting him up in a palpable stupor. Like, you know, like he's like talking about, I need to kill him. And he's like, yes, I will, but I can't. You know, and he doesn't have the will to kill Oren, but he does have the will to allow Oren to die.
Opposed to in the Corman film, the dentist died through Seymour's hands, through his gun that he did have.
In the movie? Yeah, no, like I said, the Corman film is much more of a film noir telling of the story. If you look at all of the things that happen, Seymour is a murderer. Even the Rick Moranis Seymour, which I feel like he is the most hapless of the murderers. Mm-hmm. He's not afraid when Mr. Mushnick points the gun at him. He seems more afraid of what the plant might do than what Mr. Mushnick is doing with a gun pointed in his face, right? He doesn't act like a man with a gun being pointed in his face. He acts like a man who knows his carnivorous plant might eat the guy with a gun pointed in his face. Exactly. So he's like slowly backs him into the plant in the movie, but in the musical, he's asking Mr. Mushnick to look in to get something out of the plant, which the plant makes it a lot easier for the plant to eat him. Yeah, he backs up and then he turns around him and the plant's already opened and he's like looking inside of it and then the chomp.
Reminded me when I looked at this and I think, I wonder.
Wonder who the doodle who.
What happened with the plant compared to the chair in Sweeney Todd? Usually there's a chair that slips people down with rolling.
Right. Yeah, into the, like, trapdoor area. Yeah.
I've seen the stage play and a movie of Sweeney Todd. However, I have actually not seen a stage play of Little Shop of Horrors. I've only seen the movie. And on Sweeney Todd came before Little Shop of Horrors. Did they have the same mechanism?
Oh, I never noticed. The cool thing about Aladdin in the titular movie is that Aladdin realizes that he needs to get to know the genie. Jafar never cares to get to know the genie. All he wants is what the genie has to offer.
Ultimate power.
Exactly. So what is the difference between Aladdin, Jafar, and Seymour Krelborn? What would have Aladdin done? We already know what Jafar would have done.
Yeah.
Jafar would have done what Seymour is basically doing, but better, because he would have just killed people. He would have just fed it to the plant and wouldn't have had any qualms.
It's an interesting take on that. Seymour is an interesting character, namely because of his name, Seymour. It is actually, yes, for those of you that know Shakespeare, his name does derive from the Moors, from Africa. He does have black roots in his name. The C part is French. So he's French African name.
Well, I mean, you know, like it kind of makes sense because Mr. Mushnick is kind of a dick to him for no reason.
Yeah.
And he lives in the basement of Mr. Mushnick's shop.
I hate saying this, but there are racist Jews out there. Mushnick is Jewish. The character is written Jewish.
Audrey tries to defend him. Mr. Mushnick, like in the play version, is always very nasty about it. Like, you know, and it's like, why should you care about Seymour? And I always wondered why Mr. Mushnick, and maybe that's the true intended version of Little Shop of Horrors. I think he only likes Seymour when Seymour brings him money.
Very much. Money, money, money.
Like he's like right. Mr. Krabs in SpongeBob, yeah. Right?
Wow, I didn't realize that until just now. Wow, this is enlightening. Please everyone, he's a people pleaser. Right. He is like totally.
Like literally Seymour Krelborn and Mr. Mushnick have a SpongeBob Mr. Krabs relationship. Like SpongeBob is always trying to, like, you know, Seymour isn't as much of a people pleaser, but he is, like, you know, in his quirky way.
He could have just let that plant die.
Yes, he's a shy little murderer. On top of the whole, like, Seymour thing, you know, he's doing a Faustian bargain. I mean, like, based on having his blood sucked by the plant, you know, that's the initial, like, you know, I pledge to offer my blood to you for my success, right? Yeah. And then also, he didn't have to kill Orin, and he also didn't have to kill Mr. Mushnick, though. Like, at that point, he had to kill Mr. Mushnick. That's why I always had an issue with, like, the idea of killing. You know, like I was telling you about Game of Thrones, Tyrion Lannister talking about, like, all the different styles of killing, and, like, you know, talking about suicide and fratricide and matricide and, like, all of those different things. I couldn't find a version of, like, murder where you just set someone up to die, like a booby trap, right? Like that's a specific style of murder. Saying, hey, jump in this trash compactor. That's not a trash compactor. It's a place to hide.
I mean, it is not a five-year-old show.
But it is very cartoon death. I mean, like, we don't see any, like...
No, there's really little blood.
Yeah, it's a bloodless film.
The only blood you see is actually Seymour when he's first feeding the plant. After then, there's no blood. You don't see blood unless you hear, I'll give you a few drops if that'll appease.
Well, I guess that was what they did with the musical, right? They only showed a few drops. You know, Roger Corman is not afraid of blood, which is why, like, the original film is more gruesome. But, you know, when you take a gruesome film and turn it into a musical, you can't really just throw blood everywhere, unless you're talking about Evil Dead.
The musical, which was interesting, and I saw, and I was not in the splatter zone, but it was definitely fun.
I did the splatter zone once. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
It was also a little bit like Romeo and Juliet. These two star-crossed lovers in this world gone mad.
I know, right? Because like the plant brings them together, but it is also the plant that tears them apart. But in the movie, they survive, so that's cool. Now, so like originally with the alternative ending, plant not only kills Seymour and Audrey, the plant takes over the rest of the world. But whatever they offer you, don't feed the plants. Plant. Like it's on top of the
from Peoria.
To Des Moines. Yeah, so he's on the Statue of Liberty. He's all everywhere, like, destroying things, eating people, gobbling them up. It's great.
I actually had the privilege of seeing it with my brother years ago at the historic Castric Theater with the original previews, which included the first Marvel movie ever, Howard the Duck.
I assume David Geffen didn't care for it, and they said audiences didn't care for it, but I bet Geffen didn't care for it because he thought it should be like probably a nice, happy musical. He's the kind of guy that like, you know, like thinks that there's a B-roll out of an animation footage. So
like I said, guy with money.
A lot of people believe that Little Shop of Horrors is really about commercialism. Commercialism turns the little shop into this great moneymaker, but also destroys the people that created it. Like McDonald's.
Or right? Walmart. The high cost of low prices.
That sounds like a terrible documentary.
It was. It was an actual one. It was Walmart. The high cost of low prices.
I thought you said it instead of like the plant sort of standing for commercialism, you felt it stood for something else.
The Trump presidency is kind of like the plant, like taking over the world. It's kind of scary for some of us.
So like in this analogy that you have, like what, how would you, how is Trump the plant? Like describe the little shop scenario.
The plant, he's enticing you, giving you everything your little heart desires, but for a price that he's not telling you. And then soon enough, you don't recognize your world.
Oh, yeah, that's super legitimate. And I guess Seymour Krelborn would be the Republican Party. Like, obviously, like, the plant is somehow controlling all of this, and Seymour honestly should have asked the plant, how are you going to give me everything my greasy heart desires? You're a plant. You're a talking plant. I recognize that, but you are still a plant that can move and talk.
In the movie, not the stage play, there is a phrase that is uttered only twice. When executives are trying to buy Seymour, up yours. Why would you say up yours when you're trying to get someone to do what you want? And then it is said one more time in the original. The one thing that was added, Mean Green Mother from Outer Space, Academy Award nominated song, the only one created for a movie version. That should have been a warning sign, but nope, it wasn't till it was too late. Some things are mentioned in Little Shop of Horrors. I sometimes don't know if it was put in there for sponsorship or just a mention of the current era and time.
Oh, like a sort of like in movie ad placement.
Two cans of Maxwell House use. There's the first in Audrey 2 when Audrey 2 is first shown.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It starts in a coffee can.
And then after Audrey 2 has moved out of that coffee can, we see it on the desk of John Candy's character. Better Homes and Gardens magazine is mentioned in somewhere that's green.
A picture out of Better Homes and Gardens magazine.
In the Pine Sol.
Yeah, the Pine Sol scented air, right, wow.
Life is perfect in a tract house that we live somewhere that's green. Betty Crocker, Lucille Ball from the Lucy and Ball show. Donna Reed, same thing. Howdy Doody. There is a song that was sung during the Stonewall Riot, and it was to the tune of the Howdy Doody show.
We're fighting policemen now. We're fighting policemen now because they're real assholes. No, there's definitely a lot of product tie-ins in the movie, like now that you pointed out. I just don't think about it because some of those brands are super old and like, you know, or if you see Q-tip, you're getting product placement. When you hear Kleenex, he doesn't say, here, take my tissue. He said, here, take my Kleenex.
Here, take my Kleenex.
Wipe that Revlon away.
Hedy Lamarr, an Australian-American actress, is mentioned. Hedy Lamarr is mentioned by the plant. Harley Davidson, James Dean, the rebel in Rebel Without a Cause. It Ain't Kansas was a Wizard of Oz reference by Audrey 2. Oz's connection with Jim Henson and that crew. Martin P. Robinson, puppet design just made Mean Green Mother from Outer Space come to life. I mean, you believe this plant was going to eat you. This was a realistic looking puppet. Casting is key. Sure, you have amazing catchy songs that will stay with you. What about the stars that bring them to life? Studio heads wanted Cyndi Lauper, who turned it down, and it rumored that Barbra Streisand was offered the role, which David Geffen thought would be amazing. Thankfully, people said, Ellen Green originated the role. Come on. And she is the definitive Audrey. However, I did see a similar kind of an idea. Beetlejuice, the musical, which ended too soon. with a woman who played Audrey, Carrie Butler, who was amazing. So I could only imagine how amazing she was as Audrey. Lovable loser opposite to Audrey was Seymour, played by Rick Moranis, who is amazing, known mainly for Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, at least from our era, as well as Ghostbusters.
Rick Moranis is a lot more of an important person in Hollywood than people think. And honestly, like a really serious actor. For Ghostbusters, they wanted John Candy to play the role of the key master. So when the John Candy was doing it, they were like, John, you need to tone it down, John. Like that's not how it should be, right? Like and because you know, like he's you know what, an accountant, right? And you know, he's just like a super bland and odd individual that like whatever, like you know, kind of hapless, like Seymour, but whatever. Rick got the job, and like, you know, I get it. Like Rick is a serious actor.
SCTV, and so he brought John Candy into the mix as well. He showed some depth. Arthur Denton character, which was originally Wilbur Forrest, was played by Bill Murray, and in one scene, he plays opposite of Steve Martin as the dentist who started at SNL, would go on to work in Parenthood, My Blue Heaven, and LA Story. Alongside that, they also got Jim Belushi, who was originally going to be Paul Dooley. In the end, the guy who's like, come on, you know, I can get, you know, these things will be bigger than hula hoops. Jim Belushi was the trifecta of the comedy gold within that SNL 2 Little Shop move.
Cool. Jim Belushi was on SNL 2?
Vincent Gardenia, brilliant name, I think, in pun-related way, Gardenia, was an Italian-American, which, you know, Italians and Jews look a lot alike sometimes, so I understand it. And he's known for Moonstruck, Bang the Drum Slowly, and it earned him an Academy Award for Moonstruck, and he's also in Death Wish and the subsequent movies of Death Wish.
Death Wish movies. Okay.
That's who was Mr. Mushnick in the role that is on stage. He sings, but in the movie, he does not sing one note.
Yeah, does not get to sing Mushnick and Son. And that's just basically a song about him trying to solidify Seymour into the shop, because like he's afraid that like he's gonna go and take his plant and leave, which sort of leads to him figuring out about the murder. He's the shop owner, but he doesn't own the plant. Yeah, one of the greatest comedy horror films around. I mean, you think of Shaun of the Dead. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's not a musical. It's I get musical, it, but it could have been. Horror. That could have been a musical. Shaun of the Dead would be a great musical.
Shaun of the Dead. Comedy Gold meets Motown with Levi Stubbs, who died 2008, RIP, from Motown's The Four Tops, voicing the alien plant Audrey 2 alongside the Greek choir, which I'll get to. But sidebar, there is a new movie coming out. They are remaking Little Shop of Horrors for the role of Audrey 2, the one I'm really, really super excited about.
Barbara Streisand?
Ruin the surprise! No. unless somehow you transfer bodies. But Billy Porter. Billy fucking Porter is going to be Audrey 2. That role was made for someone like Billy Porter. The Audrey 2 character, voiced by Motown, is joined equally by the Greek choir of Little Shop that kind of leads you in and out of each different scene. They were a Supreme-styled girl group made out of Tashina Arnold from Martin, Michelle Weeks, and Tisha Campbell also from Martin. Each one was named after a different girl group. Crystal was for the Crystals, for Uptown. He's a rebel, and then he kissed me. Ronette was from the Ronettes for Be My Baby. And Baby, I Love You, and Ronette for the Chiffons. They were inducted in the one was named Chiffon. The Chiffons were known for He's So Fine and I Have a Boyfriend. The last song to be heard on the broadcast on Dallas, Texas radio, KILF, on the notorious November 22nd, 1963, when they announced President John F. Kennedy had been shot. The first spoken word we hear in the opening announcement that took place on September 23rd, Gordon Stanley Jones, a Canadian actor with a lot of voiceover work for a lot of kids' cartoons like Challenge of the Super Friends, Transformers, Spider-Man, Heathcliff, The Pebble and the Penguin. The first guest to enter Mushnick's Flower Shop is none other than Christopher Guest.
Hi, I couldn't help but notice that strange and interesting plant there in the window. I've never seen anything like it before. What is it?
Who would go on to be known for Best in Show, Waiting for Guffman, and of course, Spinal Tap. Secretary to the Dentist is played by Miriam Margolyes, who is well known for her role in Harry Potter.
Like Frank Oz, like a lot of people, I think, attributed to David Geffen, I guess, but I feel like Ashman and Oz had more to do.
Absolutely. This was their baby.
Glad that the Geffen Company put up the $25 million for it.
In the 2019 off-Broadway revival of Little Shop of Horrors, Seymour Krelborn was played by King George himself.
Oh, Jonathan Groff, right?
Or for those of you who know him in the Frozen movies.
Oh, yeah. Kristoff, right?
And also Looking on HBO, which was also pretty amazing.
No, he's done a lot of roles. I wish I remember the Netflix role. It's kind of terrible. Based off of like the FBI style of program.
Mindhunter.
There it is. You knew what it was.
You just had to tell me that part. And Holly asked me to watch it. And I said, not my genre, but maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's like really heavy, but it's interesting.
Feed me again. In January 2020, Full Circle Cinema reported that there is going to be a remake in the works. Billy Porter has been confirmed as Audrey 2, with Taron Egerton, who played Elton John in Rocket Man, to play Seymour, with Scarlett Johansson as Audrey. I'm hoping, because I know what Billy Porter sounds like. I know he is absolutely 100% amazing, but I have no clue how Taron Egerton is going to do in a Broadway show-stopping number, one after another, heartfelt. Like, I don't know. And Scarlett Johansson, I have never heard sing. I hope they surprise me. Let's hope this is not a Cats, because that would be pretty sad.
I always find it so interesting, like, how Hollywood chooses to, like, really big names for a movie. And I get that, but, like, shouldn't the object be to make the best movie with the best actors and not necessarily the ones with the best names? And no hate on ScarJo, because, like, you know, she's my girl and whatnot. But, like, you know, it'll be interesting. Because, I mean, like, what, in Chicago, I was super surprised, you know, by, I mean, Queen Latifah definitely had a great performance, but that's expected from Queen Latifah. Because she's actually
Right, Velma Kelly, I meant Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yeah, Catherine Zeta-Jones. Yeah. Yeah. Catherine Zeta-Jones has I think that's the first musical she was in, right? Yeah. She did a phenomenal job.
Well, thank you very much, folks, for listening in to another installment of Talking Musical History Podcast. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Chris. Bye-bye, everybody.
You got to fight it while we still got the chance. Whatever they offer you, don't feed the plant.
If you liked what you've heard, then check out our Patreon at patreon.com/Stonewall the Musical as we make our journey from the page to the stage.